The next case is Google versus Singular Computing LLC. Counselor Speed, I see you've reserved 5 minutes in front of the vote. just a second. Okay, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Nathan Speed on behalf of Google. Singular's patents describe a computer that includes what the patents call a low precision, high dynamic range execution unit, or LPHDR execution unit. The board found unpatentable Singular's claims to a computer that had one LPHDR execution unit. I apologize. The only remaining issue is whether or not the board correctly found that Google did not prove it would have been obvious to have a computer with more than one LPHDR execution unit. And on that issue, the board committed legal error. Before the board, our argument was that Opposer would start with what was called the Doxer reference. Doxer includes an execution unit called an FPP. There's no dispute at this point that Doxer's FPP is an LPHDR execution unit. The advantage that Doxer describes for its FPP is that it allows for lower power consumption, which is ideal for laptops because they run on batteries. We then turn to Macmillan. Macmillan is a reference that describes how to bring supercomputing power to laptops, just like Doxer describes. And it describes a parallel processing architecture that has many processing elements. Each of the processing elements includes a floating point accelerator. Our argument was that Opposer, looking at both references, would see how they could be fit together, and they would take Doxer's FPP and use that as the floating point accelerator in Macmillan's device. The resulting device would be a computer with many LPHDR execution units, rendering the claims obvious. There was no argument below that Opposer could not have achieved this invention, and there was no dispute below that the resulting invention would have achieved both of those benefits, a high-performance laptop that consumed less power. The board rejected it solely on the finding that the combination would have cost more money to manufacture than the Macmillan laptop alone. Respectfully, that was legal error.
I didn't read the board as saying nothing but cost. I thought there was this mix of things related to cost, one of which was complexity and maybe an occasional reference to size.
So the board did try to align its decision with the case law, because the case law is pretty clear that economic costs standing alone do not negate an otherwise technologically motivated combination. What the board did was point to the various discussion in Macmillan that said that we want to avoid complexity and size, not for technological reasons, but because of the economic costs that complexity and size would create. Macmillan, column one, starts to introduce the invention, and this entire invention is about the fact that supercomputers at that time, this is the 1990s when Macmillan was written, they were really good at performing a lot of calculations.
But what if we were to conclude that the board was reasonable in its reading of the Macmillan reference to be that Macmillan is trying to look for the most simple, stripped-down design possible to accomplish supercomputing inside of a personal laptop computer. And so its objective, yes, is to keep it as low cost as possible, but blended with that is this strong objective to use as many simple elements as you can in order to accomplish this supercomputing.
Two responses there. The first, I'll engage in a second with the facts of what Macmillan.
I guess the question is, if we were to say that that's a fair reading or a reasonable reading of the reference, then would you not agree that we would have to affirm?
No, I would disagree. In addition to the case law on economic costs not providing a motivation, undercutting a motivation to buy, this court has also had a series of cases where you've made clear that the primary purpose of the prior art reference does not control. Prior art references are good for everything they disclose. So in this case, Macmillan, whether or not Mr. Macmillan wants to keep this laptop as cheap as possible, and I'll talk about that in a second, that's his invention, and that's what he disclosed to the public. But he also, in doing that, described a laptop that had parallel processing and numerous processing elements, each of which has a floating point processor, and therefore Opposer, looking at that, and not concerned as much about cost as Macmillan might have been, but concerned more about power consumption and high performance.
But we have case law that says, we're not going to adopt a proposed combination if that combination would defeat a reference's objective. Like the reference you are about to modify, if that reference is essentially saying, "This, I have a core objective here, and that that core objective would be somehow erased by the combination, then our case law says then that's a fair basis to reject the proposed combination.
So those cases, every single one of the board cited and that Singular cited in its brief, they've all related to technological aspects of the computer or of the prior art reference. So it's removing a technological feature of the reference. So if someone wanted to take Macmillan and remove its parallel processing architecture, that would be contrary to its inventive purpose, which is adding a parallel processing architecture to it.
But what if it's also true that, or fair to say, that Macmillan was looking for the most elemental, simplified architecture possible to do what it wants to do?
So that's where we would have to gauge on the facts of Macmillan, and I would argue that substantial evidence doesn't support that reading of Macmillan. Macmillan, it starts with a conventional laptop, and it's adding a supercomputer architecture to it. It is indisputably making that laptop more complex and more costly than it was before Macmillan came up with his invention. At column 8 of Macmillan, he says that...
A complicated machine, to be sure, but the goal is the least complicated version of that complicated machine.
But he does talk about allowing scalable performance at various price points. So he's not saying, this version that I have here is the only version I have. And indeed, the embodiment we relied on had 256 processing elements, but he talks about having thousands of these processing elements. So he's open to having a device that's much more complex than the embodiment, the laptop embodiment that's disclosed in the specification. But he's clearly is, when he talks about cost, he says you can have high performance computing at moderate cost. And so the question is, in context, what type of cost is he talking about? And he's saying it's an additional cost that doesn't approach the exorbitant prices of then existing supercomputers, which is he literally in column one says $100,000. So that's the cost that he's concerned about. All of his discussion of complexity and size, it all goes back to what his overall purpose here, which is to bring supercomputing power to the everyday person so that they can have it in their laptops. It's going to be more expensive, but there's going to be a moderate cost to this laptop, but he still saw that as a desirable feature. And I think Opposa desiring that feature and then wanting to have their laptop last a little bit longer on their plane ride to California, what have you, would look to Doctor's FPP and see that that is providing a solution to a potential problem there. Unless there's more questions on the cost issue, if your honors were to reverse the board on that issue, and remand would be necessary except for this other ground that we have, which is the customization ground. On the customization ground, it started from the same basic premise as the first one, where we have Dr. Macmillan. But in this one, instead of focusing on Macmillan's laptop, we're focusing on another disclosure of Macmillan, which is that you can use his invention in an embedded computer that supports application-specific processing, like signal processing. We then pointed to this reference called Tong, which is a research paper, and the whole purpose of Tong was to test a bunch of benchmark signal processing applications to figure out, do they really need full precision, or can they operate at lower precision? And he concluded that 5 of those applications can work with varying degrees of low precision. So he said, or it disclosed to the public, that these 5 applications don't need the overhead of full precision. A person that's still in the art reading all these references together would see that you could piece them together to create an embedded computer that's application-specific to support the signal processing applications that Tong discloses. And when you're doing that, you would just customize Doctor's FPP, because at that point, you're never going to use its circuitry for full precision. You're going to only use between 11 and 5 mentisubits of precision. And at that point, if you know you're only going to use that, there's no need to create the full Doctor, because it's going to have circuitry that's just never going to be used. The board rejected that by finding that full precision was fundamental to both Doxer and Tong. And respectfully, the record just doesn't support that. The paragraph that they cited in Doxer, paragraph 3, it says, while some applications may require full precision, other applications may not. This is paragraph 3, the one that the board relied on. It admittedly says that for a general purpose processor, a greater precision may be needed, but our combination was not a general-purpose processor with an application-specific processor designed.
I guess the sentence you're just quoting about some need greater precision, others don't, and so. But then the rest of that sentence says, and that's why we want selectable precision. That's why we want the ability to have the flexibility to fine-tune the precision for any given application that's operating.
When it's used in a general-purpose processor that you know you might need full precision, in an embedded context where you know you're never going to use that full precision. So if you're reading Tong,
isn't the whole point of Doxer to have selectable precision?
And our combination maintains selectivity, and you just were selecting between the various low-level precision that Tong taught that its five signal processing applications could use for. It had ones that worked well at 11 metisubits, but the others, Elvin and Sphinx, I believe they were called, worked well at as low as 5. So you'd be able to switch between those varying levels depending on what signal processing application you were supporting at that time. And important, I think it's also important in Doctor's Fig paragraph 3, it also says, if it is known that an application always requires a certain reduced precision, the floating point processor can be designed and built to that reduced precision. That's what our combination was. It is an embodiment in which you know that you're always going to have reduced precision, and so Doctor's paragraph 3 is telling you that you can design a processor specific to that, and we would just maintain the selectivity of Doctor so that it could switch between the different signal processing applications that it's supporting in this embedded application-specific embodiment. As for Tong, the board's decision on Tong itself at page 81 explicitly identifies that Tong says not all programs need the precision provided by generic floating point hardware. The fine precision of the 23-bit Mantissa is not essential, and a single custom floating point format may be a viable option for particular applications. Tong, in no uncertain terms, is saying that full precision is not fundamental. It's suitable for certain applications. And so with that teaching, having looked at Doctor, Poza would understand it's better to customize this chip, reduce circuit space, because otherwise I'm going to have circuitry that's just never going to be used.
Counselor, you're into rebuttal time. Do you
want to keep going? I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Okay. Mr. Lambert-Nakos. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Lambert-Nakos, Your Honor.
Lambert-Nakos.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Board did not err in finding that the teachings of Macmillan, which discourage additional size and complexity in the processing elements of Macmillan for the purpose of minimizing costs, were barred as a matter of law by the Farenkopf case and other cases. The Farenkopf case specifically holds that a businessman's concerns over the cost of making a combination are not relevant. Here, the Board did not rely on a businessman's concerns at all. The Board relied on specific teachings in Macmillan that in order to make a low-cost computer with supercomputing power, one which could be used by consumers, that the processing elements should be simplified. They should not have additional registers, they should not have additional output buffers, additional pins, because those features increase die size, increase packaging size, and result in increased costs. And so the Board found that a combination with Doctor would violate those teachings. Doctor is a processor that actually contains not only the processor which performs the mathematical operations, but also an additional controller. That additional controller goes with each Doctor processor, and its job is to adjust the precision of the Doctor processor. And so a combination which would replace each processing element in Macmillan with essentially two processors, the Doctor arithmetic unit and the controller, would clearly violate what Macmillan was trying to accomplish, which was a simplified array of processing elements. There was nothing in the law. Yes, Your Honor.
I'll sort of step back for a minute from I think your description, which I don't take any issue with it. Explain to me let's say from first principles, are the right way of thinking about the role of cost is. And because I think at the heart of what you just articulated is that cost, if it is called out in one of the references as important, should be treated differently from cost if it is not called out in one of the references. And tell me how we're supposed to think about why that should be so, or as I think the other side says, not so.
Yes. An invention that has as a goal creating a device which reduces cost does not fall within the Fahrenkopf line of case law, where it is the inventive goal, at least where it is the inventive goal of the patent, and the patent teaches technology that should be chosen in a way to meet that goal. And what Macmillan does is he discusses particular types of components, such as registers, such as output buffers, as examples of technology which you would not include in the Macmillan device, excuse me, in the Macmillan device, because it would hinder reaching his goal of providing a low-cost computer. So he has technology teachings which he advocates for in order to reach that goal.
So, but I think you're just re-describing what I want to take as an accurate description of what Macmillan says. The question is, as a matter of first principles, why should that matter, you know, in light of the clues, you know, things like, I think, you know, Mr. Speed referred to, references teach whatever they teach, even, you know, components of what's in the references, ultimate goal of creating something that combines things. Lots of, you know, it may be obvious to take one piece that it teaches and shed others and thereby not reach the reference's goal. I'm trying to understand how to think about why this accurate description you're giving of Macmillan, I'm assuming, should matter for the bottom line conclusion of whether there's a motivation to combine.
Well,
because you're not combining the whole thing, right?
Yes. The ultimate goal matters because under the case law, under the Chemours line of case law, a combination which would eviscerate or would force you or would result in your failing to meet the inventive goal is not obvious. So if the inventive goal of Macmillan is a low-cost computer and your combination would prevent you from reaching that goal because you violated technological teachings in the reference, then that combination is not obvious. The same applies for Doxer. Doxer's inventive concept is to create a general purpose processor. The general purpose processor can execute all the applications that are presented to the processor where it's installed. Everyone agrees that Doxer has full precision support. But Doxer has full precision support because his goal was to present something which is general purpose. He acknowledges that there exists special purpose or low precision processors in the art, but that's not what he's doing. He's presenting a general purpose processor. And so a combination such as in ground 4A, which would remove that full precision support, would eviscerate Doxer's inventive goal.
So on that one, I think as I understood Mr. Speed's point was that grant all of that, but the claims here require general purpose computers or general purpose processors. They require a processor that does certain things, and there are such things which the market is by assumption interested in. Special purpose processors, and why wouldn't a relevant skilled artisan thinking about making a special purpose processor for one of the purposes for which precision just isn't needed, it's not needed, make this combination of kind of massively parallel, imprecise only processors?
Well, in addition to the size arguments, which apply also to Mr. Speed's argument, a person of ordinary skill in the art, under the case law, does not go to a reference and modify that reference in a way that would remove the inventive concept. And so the reason why a person of ordinary skill in the art wouldn't look to a general purpose processor to create a special purpose processor is because the law, in an attempt to remove hindsight combinations, have certain guardrails on how to modify a reference. And under the Camores line of case law, if the reference is teaching a person of ordinary skill, this is the CPU of a device. It is to execute all of the applications that are running on this device, a general device such as a laptop, a PDA, etc. You would not take that reference and strip away what makes it the invention in Doxer's mind, and is disclosed in the publication itself, to put it into your combination in order to invalidate a claim. So it's the line of case law, such as the Camores case.
In the petition, or petitions, I guess, here was this idea of that the claims cover processors that are not just general purpose processors, and somebody would be interested, a relevant skilled artisan, would be interested in making special purpose processors, and those special purpose processors essentially provide the motivation for this, what the Doxer, Macmillan, Tong combination. Is that adequately presented in the petition?
Well, the first part of what Your Honor said about the claims presenting a special purpose computer.
No, they don't require it. They're completely indifferent about whether the processors that are in the claims are for general purpose use or special purpose use, which means you could anticipate it by, or make it obvious by, special purpose thing would come with it. So is that an adequately preserved argument? I don't mean to be asking a difficult question, but maybe I am.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I didn't follow.
Did the petition set forth this theory of a special purpose processor? That isn't that we've heard about this morning.
The petition mentioned in ground 4A that the modification would be in order to be able to run certain identified low precision applications.
And that there is a skilled artisan who would be interested in creating such a processor.
It says, I believe, that a skilled artisan would be interested in doing so, and particularly would remove the full precision capability of Doxer in order to decrease the cost of the computer by eliminating additional circuitry, which would take up space and cost money. So what's interesting about their argument for 4A is that they're arguing that a reduction in cost because of less circuitry is a motivation to combine, but they question whether Singular can rely on the fact that Macmillan teaches that you want to reduce cost and reduce size, and Singular's argument is that combination in ground 3 and 4 would increase cost. In other words, it's an adequate motivation to combine for Google that cost reduction would take place by removing circuitry, but it is not an appropriate argument for Singular to say that the Doxer combination would increase cost and therefore suggest to a person of ordinary skill in the art not to make the combination, even though Macmillan explicitly contains those teachings. Now, the combinations that are cited by Google, none of them are supported by the references themselves. Macmillan doesn't suggest that his processing elements can be replaced by low-precision processing elements. Doxer doesn't suggest that his processing element should be used in an array or that it should be limited only to low-precision. Tong doesn't suggest that a computer should use only low-precision. In fact, he suggests that his processor would be used in a computer with a full precision processor and a switch to allow selection between them. And Tong does not suggest using his processor in an array. So the only evidence that was before the board on these issues was provided by Google's expert. Whereas Singular, throughout all of its arguments, relied on the teachings in the references themselves to show that a person of ordinary skill in the art would be discouraged from making the combinations that Google advocates because of the increased cost associated with Doxer in contravention of Macmillan's teachings, as well as Doctor's teaching that his processor is a general purpose processor. And the board agreed with our reading of those references. It agreed with our experts' discussion of those references and how they ought to be interpreted. And therefore, the board had substantial evidence to find that Google had not met its burden of proof. The board weighed the benefits that Google cites. The board also weighed the evidence that we put in front of it and decided that for the claims that require a massively parallel group of low precision, high dynamic range processors, that invention was not obvious. Now, should the court determine that there was an error below and that the decision should be vacated, the board below expressly limited its findings on secondary considerations to claims with only one LPHDR execution unit. The board explicitly did not address the claims to massively parallel arrays of LPHDR execution units. We presented evidence of industry skepticism, we presented evidence of industry praise, and that evidence was specifically focused on the arrays. And so that evidence has not been considered yet by the board. And so even in vacating the board's decision, we should have the opportunity to present that evidence and perhaps even obtain further evidence as discovery is ongoing in the district court case, and there may be evidence that would be relevant to the board's finding on secondary considerations. It's also important to note for the what are called the exceeds claims, under ground 3 and 4, where the full precision capability is not excised from Doxer in the combination, that the board did not consider the issue that the claims require that in a massively parallel array, that there be a certain number of low precision, high dynamic range execution units in the array that exceed the number of units that are capable of doing full precision 32-bit multiplication. Now that's important because Doxer is capable of doing 32-bit multiplication. Even if you consider it to be low precision, the number of Doxer units cannot outnumber itself. Under the claim, Google is relying on an LPHDR execution unit being Doxer, but then excludes, in a claim construction argument, the ability of Doxer to satisfy the claim element that refers to the number of units.
Just so I understand, so this is a point that the board did not need to reach given how it upheld claims on another basis, but would have to be reached if what the board did was set aside.
That's correct. Okay.
Would you like to conclude this point? You're out of time.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
You have a little over 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly on the question of whether or not the petition raised it, I'd point Your Honor to Appendix 720 to 723. That's where we set forth the customized ground. It's explicitly set forth there that it was about an embedded system supporting Tong's applications, and that's there. The other just back points I just wanted to point out, the idea that this adding registers is the problem that Macmillan was teaching again. Macmillan explicitly, its invention adds additional registers to the laptop. They're called address location registers, and that's at column 14, I believe. And so Macmillan's actually adding registers, which is the only thing that Singular's counsel cited as causing the increase in cost of Macmillan. But going back to the question, is this a case of first principles, or how should we be looking at this? In Ray Farenkopf, that prior art reference in that case, the primary reference that was being modified said the use of inhibitors is disadvantageous because it's costly. And the very combination was using inhibitors in that reference. And the patent owner said, you can't do that. This reference says it's costly, so why would you ever use inhibitors in view of this reference? The Federal Circuit, and it's made clear that a given combination would not be made by a businessman for economic reasons does not mean that persons skilled in the art would not make the combination because of some technological incompatibility. Only the latter fact would be relevant. It's legally, economic costs are legally irrelevant. The hypothetical person with ordinary skill is an ordinary artisan in the technical field. They shouldn't be burdened by wondering if this particular invention is going to be too costly to actually be commercially viable in the market. It's a question, you get a patent if you come up with a technological invention. There's nothing in Singular's patents I should know about cost savings or that this is a particularly a device that he's found a way to achieve a lower cost silicon or anything like that. He has an idea that you should have low precision, high dynamic range execution units. The problem for him is that Doxer had it before, Tong had it before. And so the only basis that he has these claims now is on the idea that it would be more expensive to manufacture Macmillan's laptop if he used Doxer's FPPs. That is contrary to this court's law. You've got In Re Fahrenkopf, most recently in Grit Energy. In Grit Energy, this court vacated and remanded on this exact issue because the board found that the combination would have been more costly. This court said in that case, even if we accept the board's factual determination that swapping the primary reference's components results in a more expensive system, that determination standing alone is insufficient to reject the technological reasons that the petitioner provided. That's precisely what happened here. The board allowed the cost concerns of Macmillan to stand alone and never addressed our technological basis for the motivation. There is no dispute that Poses could have achieved this laptop, that it would have been a high-performance computer, and that it would have saved power. Unless there's any questions, I'm happy to rest in the briefs.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
We'll take this case in.